Okay. We, or I, created as if you saw the video from last year, the recording from last year's lecture, you saw that I went through an example, and the same example is there this year, but I've made some small changes, and if you already saw it once, I think then you can really grasp some of the things I'm saying this time. So if you go to the lecture materials on Blackboard, and then under resources, PDO sample code. I modified it, so it's a different one than what was there yesterday, but if you get the code there, then you can find all the examples that are the one example that I'm going to be playing with for the rest of the day. Now, what you need to remember, and I think I have it on one of the slides later on as well, is that process data, that step, is specific to each project. What you're going to do with the database data will, of course, depend on the project. In the example, I try to keep the example that I'm going to go through here very simple. So in the example, I do no processing. I just return whatever I get from the database. Remember that in your case, you do have some processing to do. You remember what the processing was? The almost last thing I said before the break.
Package the
yes, you need to package into event list, and the event list contains event objects. So it means first you need to create event objects and put event objects into the event list. That's exactly what the processing is. Not much in this case either, but it's at least that much step. Now, in this example code, the first thing we do, if you remember the first step, is to connect to the database. And let's just look at the code in a short while. But then there are three types of information that we pass to the database management system when we connect. The first is database information. If you remember when we talked about what is a database and what is a DBMS, you remember the database is the collection of data. The one and same server, so we need to know what is the server. And we need to know what type of DBMS do we have, because the PDO is a general interface for data objects, for databases. So it may be MySQL, but it may be some other server as well, Postgres or SQL Server or some other database. And the driver needs, or the PDO driver needs to know what database it will be facing the other end, because the different databases have a different, little bit different implementation on their APIs. So we need to know what is the DBMS, what server is it running on, and what database on this server do we want to access. So that information we need to pass. Then the PDO knows what server, what protocol, because what MySQL is or what database management system is there, and it knows what database you would like to connect to. But as we said, the authorization control inside the DBMS will also require us to log on. So we need to provide some user information, which is a database username and password. And now I have to make a little side jump, because some of you were a bit confused about what username and password should you provide in acceptance tests or in unit tests in the DB. You remember in the DB, when you enable a DB module, you need to provide username and password. Another question is, what username and password is this? And that depends on what's set up in the database. If you, at least, I don't know Mac and Linux, but at least on the PC, if you just install XAMPP as is, then you will have the database user being root and no password. And if you look up on the internet, you find that that's not recommended, having root without password. So if we go to, let's see here, PHP MyAdmin. So when here, we are at the server level here. If you go to user accounts, then we can see what users are known on this database. I like, when I develop software, I like to be somewhere else than somebody else than root, because root has all privileges. I like to make sure that I don't mess up anything that I shouldn't mess up. So this user that I'm logged in as has only access to, if I look at the privileges, edit privileges, you see that in general I can only select from general tables, but I do have some database specific privileges. I have given myself the right to do all the DML operations, I mean select, insert, update, delete, on the assignment 1 database, on the assignment 5 database, on the samples database, and the test database, all users have all accesses. So that's, it's a test, so nothing, we don't worry about what's happening there. So I can do everything. So in the user accounts, here will be the root. And if you like to set the password, and 127.0.0.1 a localhost should really be the same thing. So I think if you set on one, it will, that's the password it will test. But I didn't try that. So you might set the same password on both of them. If you like to set the root password, you just go here and change password. Then it will tell you whether the password is strong enough. So if you have beer, hopefully it's extremely weak. I hope so. I typed in beer. So that should not be so good. Yeah. So this way you can change the password. And that's, so unless you create your own user, I created my own database user here. That's the my name. And I log in as this user, and this user has very limited access. So if I do something with that user, it doesn't mess up the whole database. It just messes up the it could possibly just mess up the databases that I give it right to work on. But this, we'll talk about this when we talk about security towards the very end of the course. We're going to talk about all of these things. But just so that you know what user and password we talk about, it will be the database user and the database password. As I said, the authorization control inside the DBMS, when we log in, we'll check, are you the one you claim? Meaning, does the password match what's stored on your profile? And number two, do you have the right to do the operation that you are requesting? That's what the authorization control is going to do. So just make sure that the username and password is aligned with this. Strong recommendation, if your database root user has no passwords, consider setting a strong password for the root user. I'm not expecting any of you having the database open in the wild, but be sure if you just leave it open in the wild, somebody will test and try and might break what you have. That's the second part. The third part is that there, you may sometimes provide information related to the connection itself. It could be the character sets, like we're going to use UTF-8 with 4-byte characters. There might be error modes. We are going to show you we would like to be in an exception mode. So there, you may need to pass some more information. Now, if you go here and explore, let's see if we can find, there we go. What I've done in the sample is that I have an object that is basically a set of operations. It will create a PDO object. It could run a simple query. It would run a query to fetch everything in one big chunk. It will insert. It will test for auto increment. It will run update and run delete. So we'll go through this step by step and talk about them so you have a clear idea what's happening for you in each case. And to make that easy to do, I created this PHP script that's basically calling the operations and outputting whatever the result is. For now, I'm commenting out quite a lot of the functionality. Just for the beginning, we are just going to create a new database object. And we're going to run a simple query and the fetch all query. So if we go to the sample code, so what is the first part? Well, the first part is that in the constructor of this object, as you will do in the DB event model object, the first thing you need to do is to create a connection to the database. And that we do by creating a new PDO object. The PDO object requires some parameters. The first is we need to tell what is the database management system, what is the host, meaning what's the server is this database management system running on, and what database are we using, And then, as I said, you can do the character set. Either you could put it here, or we could set it on the connection later on. Then it needs the username and password for the database user that's supposed to run the operations. So the authorization, database authorization, can come in play and check that you have access. And we will talk about that a little bit later. I would like all of you to include this one, this parameter, to make sure that the database is running in exception mode. So whenever there's an error, it will throw an exception. And we'll talk about this towards the end of this lecture. So the first thing is very trivial. It just connects to the database on this. And I prefer putting it here in an include file, rather than putting it in the code. And I think I might have a question on that on the slide a bit later. The database that I'm currently using, or that I created, is on test. It has a list of CDs, the ID of the CD, some title, the name of the artist, what is the genre, and what year was the album created. And by the way, I need to tell you, a long time ago, a few years back when I was teaching this, I kept on having Justin Bieber as the example, and then the students came to me with a gift, and then had been buying the to put on the blanket and my pillow, a Justin Bieber cover. So I got the really, yeah. I even have a photo of me sleeping underneath Justin Bieber. I like that. So a little bit of jokes. And then there is a table where this code, genre code, is explained with a name. So it has a name here. So the BRN is for children's CDs. That's how we've done it. So there are two tables, one with different genres and one where you have the CDs, and it has this short tag for the genres. So there's nothing complex. So the first thing we'll do is to run this simple query. And the simple query is going to the database with a query, and the query is, I'm going to just select everything in this music genre table. And we'll talk about this later on, they're fetching it as an associative array. But basically what they do is that we're going to, while, you remember, we need to go after we query, we need to fetch all the result rows. So what they do here is in the while loop, while there are rows, then they go get each of the rows from the PDO object. And we, in this case, we put into the row, there is a bit of processing. What I'm doing here is that I get the code, the three character code, and I put a colon and the name of the code. And that is going to be put in the resulting array that I'm returning. And then for the other one, fetch all, it again runs the same query. But in this case, I don't go through and get them one by one. I'm just going to get everything so you can see what is actually returned from PDO when you do it this way. So if we run this, you've probably already forgotten what it's going to be all about. And I look at the this view here. Let's see if it's... So on this view here, you get to see the formatting. Because here, we can look at this as well, but it's not so easy to see what actually generated. So that's why I look at the source view, because it's easier to watch. What I'm doing is just dumping everything. So the first one, remember, I go through one by one and getting the codes, colon, and then the name. So that's what I see here. The first element in this array, resulting array, is the BKS boxes and children's CDs and country and blues and everything. So I get all the 19, and if you go to the local host, and we look at the music genre, we see from 0 to 19, these are all the ones. And they are here, I think they are sorted in the same way. So you can see them in the same order. They are sorted by code in both cases. Let's look at the output here. And after that, we have the fetch all query. Let's talk about that in a second. Because we have connected to the database, we have gotten everything. So here we run the command processor. The query optimizer made a plan, and we got all the data being buffered here, and we asked the database here to get them one by one, and they'll be copied then to the PDO object and eventually into our PHP code. So let's then see if we can continue this one. Now, do we remember what happens here? What should the model do with the PD object? You remember we need to connect to the database, we need to set up a query, we need to bind parameters, run the query, and then get the results. That's what we need to do. So, what's the first thing? First operation you guys need to do when in the DB event model. Yeah, how do you do that in PDO? Yeah, so we create a new PDO object. And then, as we said, as parameters, we can just say connection params. So we need to say where is the data, what type of database, who is the or where is the server, who is the user, what's the password. Let's see if I can do it in italic. No. Yeah. Okay, so we have a connection. What's happening next? If you go to the code to see, the next is actually to, in this case, we just query the select query right away. So, next thing is to query. And then what we're going to query is, let's see, some select statement. Okay, what's the next thing to do? Remember? The fetch. So next would be here, we fetch. In this case, we did the associative, but that's not so relevant. So we just need to do a fetch. Oh, sorry. How many fetches would we have? And then for each fetch, we get, what do we get back from each fetch? Sorry. I'm going to use this one. What do we get back from each fetch? Yeah. One row. So this would then be a row from the table. Table row. And this part here, let's see if I can draw something like this. This part here is going to be, There we go. it's going to be repeated until we have received all the rows. Then the model, in your case, need to package all these as event objects into the array, and then as before, the array would go to the view. The view would format the page based on all the events, and that HTML is returned to the user. You see that flow? So what's new now is that rather than getting all the information here directly from the model in the session object, now we actually need to go to the database. And that happens through the PDO. So we create the PDO object with all the connection parameters. In this case, we query because there was no prepared statement. We'll come back to that in a second. And then we fetch one by one the results. Now, why did I store the connection parameters in separate files? If you look at my file here, you don't see what the server is. You don't see what database I'm running on. You don't see my username. You don't see my password. Why do I do it that way? Security. Security, absolutely. Because now I can share this. I can share this with multiple users. And the code will, and nobody would know my username and password. And also, if you have a team of different users and some would like to run on one database and some on the other database, or you have multiple scripts and you will need to modify the database information, you have it in one place. So multiple files in one place. Different users can have a different file for the connection parameters, but everything else will be the same, and you could show it to anyone without having to show your username and password, unless you share this file. then you don't earn much. But keep it in a separate file. Include that file. That will be my recommendation. And the other question is, why are we using PDO? Because, I mean, MySQL, they have their own PHP API. The other databases have their own APIs as well. Why bother using PDO then? Why not use the MySQL API? Portability, exactly. Now, the problem is that the databases aren't exactly the same, so it won't be 100% portable anyway, because there are some operations that are supported by some databases, some that aren't. But at least if you get to know PDO, then you can program towards any database. And then there are some things that may not need to change from one file to, from one database system to the other, but that should be quite small compared to if you are using totally different APIs. So try to, and that's why we require PDO in this assignment. If you have programmed MySQL before and know MySQL API, don't try. It won't be, the assignment will not be accepted if you're not using PDO. That's a requirement, minimal requirement. So let's just see. So PDO query to run the query and PDO fetch to get the results. That's what we did. Now, we have these two alternatives to getting the result. Either we can get them one by one. In the first case, what I do is I go in this while loop and I get them one by one. In this other case, we do the same thing, but we get everything. I mean, get the whole set, the whole result in one big chunk, rather than requesting them one by one. If we look at the, it was here. If you look, nope. Now here, interesting. If you look at the result here, you find that each row is an associative array in its own right. But is there something strange with it? Is that the way you would create the array, or is it something strange with that array? Yeah. It has multiple entries for the same value. So you see that BKS is the first column. That's why it has the zero, but it also has the name code. The second column has the name and index one. So what we do here is we can access the results either by index based on the column in the table or by the name of the column. That's why we have it twice. You see it? So the first, if you remember the table, it was there already, I just needed to. If you remember the table, the table has code and name. Code is the first column, name is the second. So here we have both code and the first column would be to point here, and the second would point to the other one, the other column. Are there any reasons for preferring one of these ones for the other one? Why would we go for a while rather than fetching it all, or vice versa? Well, that was a different thing. I mean, whether you got them as indexes on the columns or whether you got them as names, that's a different thing. The question here is whether you get them all or just one by one. Because in both cases, I skipped that one. You didn't see that there were actually two things that were different here. So if you look at the code in the first one, I said I'm only interested in the associative. But you could do it here as well. So if I do here, fetch all. If I do this, and I move this to the server, and I reload, I can get rid of it here as well. So I can say I just want one. If I know I'm just going to use one. So there's no difference in there. So I could just get what I want here as well. The question is, getting them all, let's say there are 3 million. I get the 3 million in one big chunk, or I get one at a time. Which one would it be a difference in doing that way, or which one would be better? I hope it won't crash. It might not crash. But the thing is that what the user wants is not necessarily everything. The user wants quick response to see that there's something happening. So if you do all the work in once and then you tell the user 2 hours later, the user has gone. If you tell the user, okay, these are the first ones, and by the way, I'm keeping on adding, or you paginate them so that you give them one page at a time, then the user will be more happy. So typically, for a programmer, the lazy way is getting it all. For the end user and for the system, it's not so convenient. It's much better if you do get the ones you are interested in and you control it. So I would suggest that you get used to the while loop. Do the while loop, get them one by one, process them, and not get used to, okay, since we have small databases, you can get the 10 at a time, it's no problem. But once you have 245 million rows, it's going to take a long time for the end user to see anything, if you do all the processing before you return anything. So use the fetch and the while loop, even though it feels like more work, and you could just fetch it all. And you get this as erase. It should be fetch all, though. As erase, no, sorry, they both do as erase, but you should return event objects. You need to do that type of processing. Get the data out of the row, one by one row, and put them into, or create a new event object and put them into the event object. So this is what we just did. We have three alternatives. We can either get them as an associative table, and that is what I have here. In the first case, we had them as both, but we can also get them as num. So if I go here, if I like to, I don't know why I should, but if I like to, I could here also say get them as a numeric. Sorry. And if I put this on the server, and I reload. Now, you probably see what the problem of just using a numeric one is. Because you need to remember in the database which one was the first one, which one was the second one. And if I change the database and add the new column or start modifying, then I need to remember which is first and second, and now did it change. So it's much safer to refer to them by their names. So prefer the other one. And if you choose to have, there. If you choose to have both, of course, then you can index them based on both the column order and also on the name. But that's, as we said, that's twice as much data. So you don't need to all that. I would say stick with the associative, fetch associative. Then you get just the one you use. And again, if we say nothing, then we get both. So we have the three choices. But stick with associative, I would say. Now, what do if you do inserts, deletes, and updates? If you go to the source code. So for the sample insert, here we see that I'm starting to use prepare statements. We're going to come back to that in a second. But basically what we do here is that we go to database, say this is a query we like to run, but I'm not going to tell you what the code and name values are. I'm going to bind them to you later on. And then we execute. And the number of rows that have been affected will be returned in this call, and then this is what I would like to return. I'm just going to keep the code for later in my call here. I'm going to show you why I keep it, but for now we don't have to worry so much about that. So if we here start to include a simple insert. So what we'll insert is a new genre called DNC, dance music. Let's, for now, just to keep it easy, let's just comment these guys out. We don't need the first part because we've already done that. Then just look at this, see what's happening. Now, if we run this now, now it says that it inserted one. The result here is the number of rows inserted. It inserts one row. Then we need to go to the database, and now you see there was no DNC dance music. But if I reload, then this has been inserted in the database. Sorry. So this is now in the database. That's what we just did. Insert this in the database. Oops, sorry. I should be here. So what actually happened is that this insert into was now inserted, and I got the number of rows affected, and that's what I returned. Do you follow that one? So nothing special about it. It's just that just insert, and then if you're interested in the results, you can just look at it. Now, it's tempting sometimes to use that mechanism as well if you would like to know how many were results of a select query. So if you do select, then you say, okay, the number of affected rows, you could try to see. In PDO, that is not standardized. So it means that not all databases will do that. So don't do that for select statements. Because select statements, you could rather do select count. Select count will tell you how many rows. So that's the way to do it for the select. But for insert, update, delete, it's standard for all databases to actually return the number of rows affected. Now, here comes the thing, the prepared statement. In this code, we got the code and the name from somewhere outside there. Could have been from the end user. And we never trust what the end user sends us, because the end user may deliberately or by accident send data that may cause the database system to break. We're going to talk about SQL injection and hacking a bit later on. But even without that, sometimes, I mean, if a user has a single quote apostrophe in their name, it may break the database system if you don't handle the characters properly. There are certain characters that have a special meaning inside SQL, and if you don't escape them, it may break the code. So because of that, we don't pass data that we get from the user directly to the database management system. The best way to do it is, in this case, prepare means that we tell the DBMS that this is the query we're going to run. We're going to run an insert where code has this tag and name has this tag or label. So we just label the values, but we don't provide the values yet. We just tell them, okay, this is what you're going to get. These are the labels, and we tell you later on what the values are. And then in the bind value, we tell that the label code should be the parameter code that we get. The label name should be the value of the name variable. And then we have set up the query, and we have passed values to all the fields listed here. And then we can say, okay, let's then execute. And here I just, again, keep it. So if we, that's what prepared statement does. And whenever, and I think that in the, it's quite clear in the assignment as well, whenever you deal with data that's been passed from the end user, remember to use prepared statement. So if it is the ID of the video you're going to or event you're going to delete, if it's the ID, or sorry, if it's the name, the title of a new event, whatever it is, you have to use prepared statements. You don't have to use prepared statements if what you pass are constants in your own code, because then you know exactly what you pass. If you know exactly what you pass, you don't have to. But if you pass data that you've gotten from somewhere, from a user or from a file or even from the database, then you may need to escape it. Yeah, I just answered that, didn't I? Sorry, I was supposed that you should answer it. Anyway, why? Because otherwise your query may break. There are characters that may cause your query to break. And when? Whenever you get data from the user that you can trust. Whenever this can happen, then you do that. Sometimes, if you like to use an SQL function, then you need to put them in the right place. So you can't do it here when you bind, for instance. So it will have to be here. So if you, for instance, if you like to insert this in all lowercase, then this is where you need to put the function call. Not here later on where you, when you pass a value. You can't do lower code here because it needs to be run inside the database. And this is just binding the value. It's not calling a function inside the DBMS. So that's why it needs to be there. It's not necessarily something you're going to remember, but now I know that I've told you so. There's also one other reason for using a prepared statement, and that is if you have a statement that you are going to be running on many different values. Let's say you're going to produce a million random addresses, so you're going to put into a database 1 million random addresses, and then rather than calling the database 1 million times with that query, because then for every time you run the query, the command processor needs to parse it, the optimizer needs to figure out how to do it, the scheduler needs to plan the schedule, and then you're going to run it. If you do a prepared statement, then the processor will parse it here, and the compiler would find what's the way to do this insert and lay out a scheduling. Whenever we bind the value, this is already done. So we have already parsed, it's already been compiled, it's already been optimized, we know what to do, we just need the data. So if you have a million or so rows to be inserted, generated by the code, then it's much faster to use prepared statements, because then all the preparation work is done once, and you just insert all the data. If you have them as independent insert queries, then each one of them will have to go through the steps of parsing, optimizing, laying out a scheduling plan, which takes time for the DBMS to do. Let's just do this one thing before we take a break. I'm not going to be able to get through all the slides, but we'll do this one. In the database, if you look at the CD, similarly to the events in your case, if you look at the structure, you see that the ID is an auto-increment. What does auto-increment mean? It means that the DBMS will create the next ID. It remembers which is the last one it used, and it will create a new one. But sometimes we would like to know what that value is. In the assignment, for instance, when you insert, when you add something, then the page will tell you what ID the event that just inserted got. And to do that, we need to prepare, bind, execute, and then we can go to the PDO object and say, okay, now, what was the ID that you just used? So that function call, last insert ID, would tell us what ID did the PDO, or the actually MySQL, assign to the last one be inserted. You follow me? So if whenever, because we don't know. We don't know what the ID is going to be. We just know that this is going to be, when you have an event, you don't know what the ID is going to be. And if you'd like to know that ID, then you need to insert it into the database first, and then you ask the database, or a PDO, what was the ID that we just, that you just used, so that we can put that into the event object that we're going to be passed to the controller. Yeah, I'm almost there, but just before we go, why should we, or when should we use auto-increment? I've used it here. Is it a good thing, or why couldn't we just create IDs on our own right? I mean, if you have cars, cars have license numbers. If you have people, people have personal numbers. So why not for a CD and for events? Why not let the application create the ID? Why leave it to the database? but you could generate global unique IDs. Yeah, that's one way. You can, it's always unique, but you could have other ways of doing it. Yeah, you are sure that it gets an ID, so it's otherwise you will have to, but you could require it as well. But it's more like you don't have to, but you could. I mean, it's there. It's a mechanism that you could use, and the most typical is that to make sure that it has an ID and that ID is unique. That's the most useful. If you have multiple databases and the risk that the same object might be created in two databases, then you can't have one scheme. So in those cases, you might use a global unique ID. So I know, time's up. So it's something that's available. You don't have to use it. That's what I'm trying to say. Okay, so we'll continue a little bit on Tuesday, and then we go into testing.